This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Who said, "We don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro"? Well, it wasn't Tony Perkins, and it wasn't me. I'm Jerry Johnson, filling in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. And we're going to talk about who said that later in the program and its link to the abortion industry as we know it today, its link to Planned Parenthood, a significant mile marker in this last week for Planned Parenthood. We're going to talk about it with an expert in the next segment. Also, is this election rigged? Is the presidential election rigged? Mr. Trump is claiming that it's rigged. The establishment is saying, "How dare he?" That undermines the democratic process. Is it rigged? We're going to look at that. And then, do you use Facebook? Most people do. Do you use Twitter? Do you use Google? YouTube videos? Is there a pattern of censorship against Christian messaging, conservative messaging? We're going to peel that back later in the program. But first, Haiti has been in the news. You know, last Sunday at my church, Centerville Baptist Church here in Virginia, we had a pastor from Haiti talk about the hurricane, Hurricane Matthew. It looks like over 1,000 people have probably lost their life in the hurricane. And he described the devastation. If you remember, several years ago, there was a massive earthquake in Haiti and approximately 230,000 people. Did you get that figure? 230,000 people lost their life in that earthquake. And what is the connection between that and the current election? We've been hearing a lot about WikiLeaks, and we've been hearing about the corruption of Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, and there is a direct link to that earthquake. Joining us now is Bernard Sansarik. He's the former Senate President of Haiti. He's seen firsthand the inner works of both Bill and Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. It means one thing to see this in WikiLeaks, but Mr. Sansarik became president of the Senate in 1994. Welcome to the program, Mr. Sansarik. Are you there? It looks like we're having a problem with that connection. All right. We don't have him on, so we'll try to get him on later. I think what we're going to do then is go quickly to Facebook, Twitter, and Google. Most of you use Facebook. I have a family member that gets all of their news essentially on Facebook. I use Twitter. I use Google regularly. I have another family member who's a big player on YouTube. And there was a breaking story this past week about one of our friends, Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager has something called Prager University. You may have seen these fascinating videos that they do on social issues, it looks like we've got Mr. Sansarik back on the line. And so we're going to go back to him. Hopefully you're intrigued by the social media tease, Facebook, Twitter, Google. There is censorship of conservative messaging, censorship of Christian messaging. But it looks like we've got Mr. Sansarik on from Haiti. Again, this is the former Senate President of Haiti. Mr. Sansarik, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line, sir, and thank you for inviting me.
Very good. Well, let's just get right to it. What was your experience with Bill and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation? What is your concern? What is your complaint about the way they operated?
Well, everything, sir. Haiti has been hit by an earthquake in 2010. Just now, 10 days ago, by Matthews.
Yes.
Haiti was devastated by those especially two explosive natural disasters. But the biggest natural disaster that ever hit Haiti was the Clinton Foundation.
Wow.
The biggest disaster that ever hit Haiti was the Clinton Foundation.
How so? I mean, it looked like they raised $30 million for Haiti relief projects. What happened to that money?
No, sir. $30 million is wrong, sir. After the earthquake in 2010, the Clinton raised $14.3 billion. They gave contract for reconstruction to all their friends, the FOB, friend of Bill. And nothing, absolutely nothing was done in Haiti. The money is being squandered. The money is being stolen. We don't know where the money is. Most likely in an offshore bank account. So it is not $30 or $300 million. It's $14.3 billion that were collected by the Clinton Foundation to reconstruct Haiti. Not only American taxpayers, but the whole world gave to the Clinton Foundation. And where is the money? Nothing, absolutely nothing was done for Haiti.
Wow.
Pay for play.
Pay for play.
It's unbelievable.
And you're saying the friends of Bill, the friends of Bill got these contracts. Did they do good work? Did they do the work they were paid to do?
Definitely not, sir. If they had done the work that was supposed to do, okay, now with the last hurricane that hit Haiti about 10 days ago, there is 1,000 people missing, millions without shelter, no infrastructure. Absolutely nothing was done with the billions that the Clinton actually had to reconstruct Haiti. And there is more. This is just the tip of the iceberg, sir. When you're talking about millions of dollars, you're talking perhaps about the deal Bill Clinton made with his friend Dennis O'Brien of DHL, where in 2014 only, $30 million were given to the Clinton Foundation by Dennis O'Brien.
Wow.
For giving him the contract in Haiti of DHL, who DHL is a cellular company that's operating in Haiti. They have the monopoly in Haiti thanks to Bill Clinton. When you're talking about $30 million, you're talking perhaps about the rice that he imported from Arkansas with his friends and destroyed completely the rice production in Haiti. Perhaps you're talking about those $30 million, $300 million there.
But that must have been it.
Fund,
well, folks, we're listening.
The fund, sir, was $14.3 billion, sir.
Well, let's come right back to that. I just want our listeners to know this is Washington Watch. I'm Jerry Johnson, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're listening to Bernard Sansarik. He's the former Senate President of Haiti. He has personal, firsthand knowledge of the Clinton Foundation, of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. And really, we've read about some of this pay-to-play operation through the WikiLeaks revelation. But without that, we have here a firsthand report, someone who was in government, someone who was on the scene at the time, saying that in the wake of this huge earthquake, the Clinton Foundation failed, absolutely failed. Mr. Sansarik, did you have any personal dealings with the Clintons? Conversations, bribes, abuse? Yeah. What happened there?
Oh, yes, sir.
Tell me about
sir.
It.
Let me explain to you. Bill Clinton invaded Haiti in September 19, 1994. It was not to restore democracy. It was actually a commercial venture that Clinton had to put Haiti under his control and make millions of dollars in Haiti. He did not expect the 2000 earthquake. But I was president of the Senate then when he invaded Haiti. And a month prior to the invasion, sir, came to my office Bill Richardson, who was actually congressman then and a man of Bill Clinton. He came to my office. I spent 4 hours with him explaining to him why the United States should not invade Haiti. So we talked for four hours. I had to say it was a very friendly discussion. I explained to him, I gave him my reason why I was against the invasion. So Bill Richardson left, and I thought he would get the message to President Clinton then. A week later, the American embassy called me, which was something usual. They called me all the time and told me that they had a messenger from President Clinton that wanted to talk to me, if they could send him over.
Wow.
The messenger came over, and then he said to me, I have a message for you from President Clinton. You join us. You side with us. You become one of the Clinton supporters of the invasion of Haiti. We will make you the richest man in the island. Now, that hit me really bad because I am a person of honor. I have, you know, I have my so much pride in my name, in my family name, and everything that I represent and I have stood for, you know, over the years. And I said, tell Mr. Clinton, Bernard Senseric is not for sale.
Wow. Good
I
for you.
I will definitely fight to the end his invasion of Haiti. So I was on the line there. I could have been an FOB, a friend of Bill, and made millions in Haiti with him. But I, you know, it was beyond me. It was beyond me to do that. I couldn't do it. And this is my experience with the Clinton. A week later, after I refused his bribe, by executive order, sir, he revoked my residence visa because at that time I was a resident of the United States. I had an alien card. He revoked it by executive order. More than that, I was elected for 6 years. I had to leave Haiti being a sitting senator. Being a sitting senator of the country, I had to leave in fear of my life because President Balaguer of the Dominican Republic called me on August 1994 and told me, Bernard Senseric, you leave Haiti when Clinton invades because you will be killed.
Wow.
Because you have opposed him all the way. I left Haiti because, and the rest, I was elected until February of 1997. Clinton blocked my salary. The government of Haiti never paid me. So, sir, I can tell you so much about the Clinton and what they did after that. Up to today, what they have done in Haiti is unbelievable.
Well, thank you, Mr. Senseric. We're about out of time. I want to thank you. You've opened this issue in a very effective way, and we need to follow up, and I hope there will be follow-up. We're about to run out of time in this radio segment, but folks, you've been listening to the former Senate President of Haiti, Bernard Senseric. Sir, thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me, sir.
Okay, folks, that's amazing. We've all heard about WikiLeaks, pay-to-play, and, you know, this, though, is a firsthand account of the Clinton Foundation, the corruption of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. Fascinating. And we need to pray for this man and for his country. Obviously, after Hurricane Matthew, they've got another crisis to deal with. When we come back, it's been 100 years since Planned Parenthood started killing babies. We're going to talk to a local pro-life activist about it all. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/Washington-update. This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the Values Bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon. It's no secret that many members of the media are clueless where it comes to the essential role religion plays in our society. At a time when faith and religious liberty are the subject of much debate, this is a big cause for concern. This lack of understanding raises the question, can politics and current events be written about without the aid of religious context? Can the American media faithfully carry out its duty to tell the whole story if it does not grasp the rich culture of faith that surrounds its content? In an important talk, Michael Cromarty of the Ethics and Public Policy Center uses as his foundation the idea that there is hardly any story in the news today that is not somehow related to religion. Using his unique perspective on the American media's interaction with matters of faith, he also delves into the practical way in which his Faith Angle Forum is helping to bridge the media and religion divide. Visit frc.org/mediaandreligion to view this talk and many more. That's frc.org/mediaandreligion.
There is a force lurking within. Of the United States of America. A shadow that threatens our freedom.
And to the Republic for which it stands.
It can be summed up in one word.
One nation, under God, indivisible.
And that word is
liberty and justice for all.
Apathy. Make plans now to vote. As Christians, it's our responsibility. Brought to you by NRB. Vote Tuesday, November 8th.
Folks, you need to vote. As if your life depended on it, because lives do depend upon it. This is Jerry Johnson, president of National Religious Broadcasters. I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins today on Washington Watch. The message you just heard is part of NRB's Christians Vote public service announcement campaign. We're urging Christian radio stations to play these ads until Election Day, and we encourage you to get your stations to do the same wherever, however you listen. Well, I asked you this question earlier. Who said, we don't want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population? The same person said, I've accepted an invitation to talk to the woman's branch of the Ku Klux Klan. Who said that? Well, it was Margaret Sanger, the president of Planned Parenthood, the founder of Planned Parenthood. 100 years ago, that organization started. They're the number one abortion provider in the United States today. And I've been literally shocked that people have been celebrating this 100-year anniversary. With me to talk about it is Jeannie Mancini. She's president of March for Life. She's a friend to NRB. Jeannie, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Dr. Johnson. It's so nice to be speaking with you.
Well, Jeannie, we've got 100 years since Planned Parenthood, but we've got 100 days to March for Life. So I want to look back, and then we'll look forward. What can you tell us about Planned Parenthood in this first 100 years?
Well, you mentioned the single most important factor, which sadly polls show most Americans are unaware, which is that Planned Parenthood is our nation's largest abortion provider. Mm. I mean, they do a really good job in the media, and they do a really good job with PR to hide that fact. Abortion is like the word that's not mentioned very often, but the truth of the matter is that they commit the largest number of abortions every single year in this country, more than any other abortion provider.
Well, and you see candidates kind of get stuck into this groove of, well, they do some good things, or maybe they help women with breast cancer problems or something like that. And those seem to be the talking points that you're always hearing. And but there was a philosophy behind this organization early on. I'm going to ask you to react to a couple of these quotes from Margaret Sanger. Here's another one. She said, "They are human weeds, reckless breeders, spawning human beings who never should have been born." How do you react to that, Jeannie?
It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Margaret Sanger had a philosophy of life that did not see inherent dignity in every single human person.
Yes.
She absolutely thought that certain people, to use her word, fit to be human beings. And these were different races, and they were different classes of people, mm-hmm. as she would divide them, including people with disabilities, like, for example, a person with Down syndrome.
Yes.
She thought that they were unfit to be a human being. And sadly, she thought that African Americans were unfit to be human beings. And so she devised this whole system by which to do away with these different populations. I mean, essentially, she was a eugenicist, a Darwinist, basically a survival of the fittest. Sadly, she defined who was fit and unfit, and she just really didn't believe that every single human being possessed dignity, you know, because they were human. She really divided it according to what she thought was fit and unfit.
Jeannie, just fast forwarding to today, do you feel like these are, do you think, do you know, have you looked into this? These clinics, are they located disproportionately in minority areas? Do they do a disproportionate amount of abortions for the poor, for the minorities? What are y'all seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the best, as far as I'm concerned, the very best data on that is from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, which shows that by far African Americans are disproportionately targeted for
right.
abortion. So whereas that beautiful population makes up about 12% of people in the United States, they make up 31% of the abortions.
That's awful.
Every single year in the United States. And other minority populations have a disproportionate number of abortions. For example, the Latino population has
wow.
many more abortions than they represent in the population. So, yes, and then there have been other groups that have shown that the clinics are in, you know, different areas that would target certain populations. But we know just from the data of the actual number of people who have abortions that this is true.
Jeannie, let's switch gears now, and we're 100 days out to something very special, the March for Life. Tell us what your theme is this year, how folks can get involved, the website, all of it. We've got about a minute or two here.
Love it. I'm so impressed that you know that, because literally today marks the 100 days out from the March for
That's
Life.
That's right.
We just know how close you are to the March for Life that you even knew that, Dr. Johnson.
Good.
So thank you
I'll
so much.
I'll be there.
We are so excited about our theme this year. Our theme is the power of one, the power of one person to build a culture of life and to impact a culture for the good. And we just know of countless stories of people who have let God use their lives to impact their area, you know, and they've made a huge difference. And NRB would be a beautiful story, you know, along those lines. So we're going to hear stories of different people who made a great impact all throughout the year. And we know that with the election this year and with a lot happening with the Supreme Court and what have you, that we need to be bolstered in our hope and we need to be encouraged. And so our theme is really very much a theme of hope, a theme of encouragement, of courage for all of us to make a difference in the year ahead.
Thank you, Jeannie Monahan Mancini, president of March for Life. Jeannie, thank you so much. Folks, when we come back, is this election rigged? Trump says it is. The mainstream media says, how dare he undermine our democratic spirit and heritage? We'll be right back. This is Washington Watch.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter question of the week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter question of the week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
In 1776, the difference of one vote gave America the English language instead of German. In 1876, the difference of one vote made Rutherford Hayes president of the United States. In 1923, the difference of one vote gave Adolf Hitler leadership of the Nazi Party. Get the idea? One vote, yours, makes a huge difference. Vote.
This message brought to you by National Religious Broadcasters.
This is Jerry Johnson sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, and you just heard one of NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, NRB's public service announcements. We're encouraging people to get out and to vote. And, you know, Jesus said we're to be salt, we're to be light, and he said we're to render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And, you know, in a government that's of, for, and by the people, in a government whose constitution starts out with these three words, we the people, to render unto Caesar means that you actually exercise your part of the government, your part of the governing process. You have a role to play, and we're all in the thick of it. The news is saying people are tense, arguing, exhausted by this election. How are you feeling out there? And now this claim that the election is rigged. Rigged. Will your vote count? Will it be erased by some kind of voter fraud? Are you going to be overwhelmed or your candidate by media bias? So Donald Trump, who is the Republican nominee, has said this election is rigged. And President Obama today had some harsh words for Trump. Listen to this.
Doesn't really show the kind of leadership and toughness that you'd want out of a president. If whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else, then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Okay, so that's President Obama. And of course, the media has been saying, you know, how dare he say that the election is rigged? Government officials, I'm here in D.C., they're reacting the same way. Oh, we can't say this. It undermines the democratic process, the confidence of the people. And I want you, though, to listen. We don't normally play a soundbite this long, but there's a Never Trump person out there, George Will, who's weighed in on this issue. So we're going to listen to that in a minute. But I want you to hear this statistic first, because I think this is very important. The Center for Public Integrity just did a study of media, and they found that journalists are favoring Clinton 27-1 over Trump. And so these journalists that gave about $400,000 to Clinton and about $14,000 to Trump. Actually, 430 of these media folks donated to Clinton compared to 50 to Trump. So in one sense, you could say, oh, there's a rigging or a bias inherent in the media, in their coverage. Who are they rooting for? Well, let's go to this Never Trump journalist, commentator, George Will. He's on special report answering the question, could the election be rigged? George Will.
Well, when Mr. Trump talks about it being rigged, he sweeps all his grievances into one big puddle. He talks about the media, he talked about the primaries, he talked about the polls, talked about the Republican National Committee. I think when most Americans hear that an election's rigged, they think of government action to rig the election, and there Mr. Trump has a point if he would just make it more clearly. It is hard to think of an innocent reason why Democrats spend so much time, energy, and money, scarce resources all, resisting attempts to purge the voter rolls, that is, to remove people who are dead or otherwise have left the jurisdiction. It's hard to think of an innocent reason why they fight so tremendously against voter ID laws. They say, well, that burdens the exercise of a fundamental right. The Supreme Court has said that travel is a fundamental right. No one thinks that showing an ID at the airport burdens that fundamental right. We know, we don't surmise, we know that the 2010, 12, and 14 elections were rigged by the most intrusive and potentially punitive institution of the federal government, the IRS. You can read all about it in Kim Strassel's book, The Intimidation Game. She's familiar to all Wall Street Journal readers and Fox viewers. So this is not a surmise, and I have talked to lawyers in a position to know. They say it's still going on, that the IRS is still intolerably delaying the granting of tax-exempt status to conservative advocacy groups to skew the persuasion of this campaign.
Okay, folks, that's George Will, and he's certainly saying there is a sense in which these elections are rigged. You've got the IRS, they are biased. You've got the media, they are biased. And you've got this opposition to, voter integrity. Why can't we have voter ID? Why can't we, clear the rolls? Let's at least get the dead people off the rolls. Why are we hearing about, illegals being rushed in, even refugees being rushed in so that they might be able to vote? Do you remember the reports of the Kennedy election, the LBJ election, or even most recently the election of Al Franken? And a lot of fishy business going on. So we wouldn't say these elections are rigged to the point to where it's a fait accompli, but certainly there are some shady characters and operations operating in this election cycle, and we need to keep our eyes open, and we need to be sure that we vote at the polls. Coming up next, if you use Facebook, Twitter, Google, are your messages being censored? We'll find out when we come back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Jerry Johnson.
As an attorney in communist Romania, Virginia Prodan searched for the truth. When she finally found it in the most forbidden book, the Bible, she made it her mission to defend fellow followers of Jesus Christ against unjust persecution. For this, Virginia was kidnapped, beaten, tortured, and placed under house arrest, even coming within seconds of being executed by order of Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian dictator. Virginia Prodan's extraordinary courage, her search for truth, and her defiance in the face of evil is the subject of a riveting talk that she delivered at FRC's headquarters in Washington, D.C., marking the release of her memoir, Saving My Assassin. Visit frc.org/Romania to listen to her account, as well as the disturbing parallels she sees between attacks on religious liberty in Romania during the 1980s and what is happening in America today. That's frc.org/Romania. Should our daughters and mothers be forced to serve in the military through selective service in a time of war? Should they be required to serve in units with men in primal conditions where privacy and personal hygiene are by nature out in the open, and where they are forced together in close proximity for long periods? The American military is about preparing for, fighting, and winning wars and performing specific operations against threats to the security of our country and vital national interests, period. Anything that distracts from the achievement of these purposes should be jettisoned. This includes placing women into special operations forces or forward-based infantry positions and including them in the selective service. For more information on the common sense needs of our men and women in uniform, visit frc.org/womeninthedraft. That's frc.org/womeninthedraft.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
There is a force lurking within.
Of the United States of America.
A shadow that threatens our freedom.
And to the Republic for which it stands.
It can be summed up in one word.
One nation, under God, indivisible.
And that word is
liberty and justice for all.
Apathy. Make plans now to vote. As Christians, it's our responsibility. Brought to you by NRB. Vote Tuesday, November 8th.
All right, that message was brought to you by NRB. What's that? National Religious Broadcasters. I'm Jerry Johnson. I'm president of NRB, and I'm filling in today for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. And that word apathy is not a word that you want to describe you in November when it comes to the election. Christians need to be salt. We need to be light. We need to get out and vote. And we need to know what's going on in America. And one of the mission points of NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, is defending free speech. So we have that in common here with FRC, Family Research Council, and Washington Watch. Very concerned about your freedom to believe, your freedom to speak your faith, your freedom to live your faith. And what we're seeing is that people are living now on their phone. They're living on their laptop. They're living on their tablet. They're doing life online. They're doing their bank account. They're doing education. They're doing social interaction online, living life online. And social media really can't be separated from life. It is, it's where we make friends. It's where we follow people. And we follow stories, breaking news stories. And Dennis Prager is a great radio host. And he has a side project called Prager University, connected to his broadcasting work. And he puts out these little info short videos. They're very entertaining, interesting. Some of them are, you know, edgy. One of them is called Are the Police Racist? One of them is called Why Don't Feminists Fight for Muslim Women? One of them is Who's more pro-choice, Europe or America? So generally, these videos are just fact-filled videos answering those kinds of very interesting questions. But guess what? YouTube has censored and restricted these videos. And with us to talk about it is Aaron Mercer. He's the Vice President of Government Relations at NRB, National Religious Broadcasters. He's a colleague of mine, and he's really our eyes and ears on the Hill, and he's really overseeing a project that we call the John Milton Project in NRB. Aaron, welcome to the program. Tell us about John Milton and how it really connects to this Prager story.
Certainly. Thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate it,
sure.
Dr. Johnson. So the John Milton Project, I'm glad you mentioned the NRB mission before. This is really a 21st century application of NRB's mission to advance biblical truth, promote media excellence, and defend free speech. NRB, as you know, Dr. Johnson, and as you know, NRB was birthed in the 1940s to battle corporate censorship.
That's right.
And
radio.
That's right. The big corporations that controlled the access to the airwaves didn't want evangelical Christians to be having their programs on the air. And NRB was formed to combat that, and successfully so.
Here we are again.
That's right. Now we're back at it again, where we have the folks who have the corporations that have, in large part, controlled to access to the online sphere, particularly in the social media world. There have been issues of censorship. There have been problems, and this Prager University video situation is just one of the latest situations, and has gotten a lot of interest, a lot of attention. I think you mentioned there were 21 of these videos that were censored. In this case, they weren't actually all taken down; they were restricted. They're restricted for adult-only content. So unless you could prove that you were over 18 by signing in or whatnot, you couldn't see them. I've seen these videos, and I think you've seen them too.
Right.
And they're not—they certainly shouldn't be classified in that way at all. Prager University had over 60,000 people so far sign a petition to get YouTube to change their mind, and I believe that's ongoing. But the John Milton Project was actually formed. We started this in 2011 because we had seen this before. This isn't a new problem.
That's right.
One of the big incidents that got this going was in 2010. Chuck Colson.
So this is 6 years ago, folks.
That's right. 6 years ago. So 5 years ago we started this project, but 6 years ago, Chuck Colson and a number of other Christian leaders started something called the Manhattan Declaration. Essentially, it's just a statement of basic Orthodox Christian belief.
Yes.
And they just wanted to be able to spread that and get other people to sign on to it.
They had an app, didn't they?
They had an app. That's right. As part of their outreach, they had an app. And essentially just said, here's what we believe, sign on to it. One of the things they said they believed is what biblical marriage is between man and a woman. And that generated a complaint from somewhere to Apple. And Apple decided that they no longer wanted the Manhattan Declaration app on their phone, on their app store.
So this is 6 years ago, folks.
That's
right. So, you know, the thing we need to just stop here for a moment and say, all right, Apple products seem to be, on the surface, value neutral. They would seem to be just tools. But you not only have, you know, Apple products, you have the iTunes App Store. And here you see 6 years ago, this corporation saying, we are not going to allow a certain kind of messaging. And what's amazing, again, the Manhattan Declaration is a very carefully worded statement. It's not incendiary in any way. It's
not
a flamethrower type of approach, you know. But it's a very principled approach. And people with PhDs and THDs and lawyers, JDs, those kinds of folks saying, this is what we believe, this is what we stand for. So it's really an amazing thing. 6 years ago, they would be booted out of the App Store.
Well, and Dr. Johnson, let me say, too, I think you and I could pick up our iPhones or our iPads right now and find things that would be a lot more offensive on the App Store. So why was this singled out?
Yeah, and that's fascinating. So we've got this project at NRB. It's called the John Milton Project. You know, when John Milton began to use the printing press and to produce tracts in England, the government said, wait a minute, we don't know if we want just common people being able to produce written messages. Maybe we need to control this. Maybe we need to prohibit it. Maybe we need to stop it. And that's sort of where we get the name here, because that's essentially what's happening with Facebook, Twitter, Google, and so forth. They've created what they're saying are, you know, this is a public square. This is a community meeting place. This is an open forum, you know, for all sorts of affinity groups. But wait a minute, not that affinity group. So, and it's not just that they wouldn't talk about the marriage issue. Actually, there are a lot of other groups that are on the other side of the marriage issue and the sexuality issue that they do cater to. I think they were big to throw up the rainbow flag last summer, actually, with the decision. You saw that on Facebook. You saw it with Google. You saw it with these other groups. But they're not an open forum if you take the traditional view, the biblical view. And so that's the problem.
And that's in the John Milton Project was formed to identify these instances of censorship and to record them. And really, you know, we want to raise the attention level people across the country about this, but also these companies too. You know, they do espouse these. They say they stand for freedom of speech. They want a public square. You know, they need to be aware when something like
this
happens.
Well, let's look
happening.
At some of these, because if people go to our website, they can see this at nrb.org/JMP. But if you just tool around on the website, you'll find it. Go to the NRB website. But I'm looking at one here. Facebook removed Governor Mike Huckabee's post in support of Chick-fil-A. Now, that was back in 2012.
That's right.
Again, this would be on the marriage issue and so forth. But Huckabee said, look, I support Chick-fil-A. Let's all go buy Chick-fil-A sandwiches. I think that's what it was. And Facebook removed that post. That's incredible.
They actually took down his site for about 12 hours.
They took the site down, not just the post.
The page, yeah.
Can you believe that, folks? Facebook took that site down. Why don't you read one of them that's a favorite of yours?
Sure. Well, and I'll refer to Facebook again. And let me just step in here real quick. I think it's important for people to realize that Facebook is all these media platforms, social media platforms are used by people around our society.
Yes.
Facebook is used by 72% of internet adults, using adults. That's 3/5 of the entire adult American population.
It's bigger than any nation.
That's about 195 million people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Wow.
Well, so another Facebook situation. I think on this program, people know who Todd Starnes is at Fox News. And in 2013, his page was actually taken down briefly too. He was denied access briefly because he wrote, and let me just quote what he wrote on his Facebook page. I'm about as politically incorrect as you can get. I'm wearing an NRA ball cap, eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich, reading a Paula Deen cookbook, and sipping a 20-ounce sweet tea while sitting in my Cracker Barrel rocking chair with a Gaither vocal band singing Jesus Saves on the stereo and a Gideon's Bible in my pocket. Yes, sir, I'm politically incorrect and happy as a June bug. And they took that post down. And he was denied access it was restored later. But the fact that was targeted is very interesting.
Now, folks, if you find this outrageous and you're motivated to get involved, you need to go to the NRB website. That's nrb.org, because our mission is to defend free speech. And you can see a documentation of more and more of these. So we've talked about Facebook. Let's move on to Twitter. I'm looking at Phil Robertson. So everybody knows about Duck Dynasty. And you'll remember that A&E Channel suspended the patriarch, Phil Robertson. And people got on Twitter and they were linking to a petition drive supporting Phil Robertson. And then all of a sudden, Twitter just blocks the post, blocks the petition. And so it's not just Facebook, it's Twitter. There you go. I use Twitter. And it's a huge disappointment to, you know, Trump talking about the election being rigged. Well, you know, it's one thing when we hear the mainstream media is rigged, but now we're thinking, is social media rigged? Not really about the election, but is social media rigged on the life issue? We were just talking about abortion. Is social media rigged on the marriage issue? Is social media rigged when it comes to Christian and conservative messaging? And I think, you know, the picture here emerges that there is some rigging going on here. Mention another one, if you
would. Sure. Well, another Twitter one to add. You remember in 2014, in October 2014, there was a referendum going on down in Houston regarding the mayor's ordinance on gender identity and whatnot. And there had been some pastors who spoke out against that. And then the city of Houston subpoenaed a number of the sermons of a number of pastors in Houston. And Twitter actually blocked users from linking to that petition supporting those pastors for wow. a time. So that, I mean, that's another example. I think all of this, it's important to, for us to make sure we're letting these companies know what's going on. I think you're right that there seems to be this pattern where it's Christian or conservative viewpoints that tend to get most of the censorship here. But these companies can do something about that. They can set up policies that prevent this from happening, and that's what we want to encourage them to do. You know, they are corporations; they're not governments. They can do what they want with their platforms. But if they're saying that they are for free speech, then let's hold them to it.
That's right, and we want to be clear on that. This isn't technically a First Amendment issue. It's not a matter of government doing this. This again is a private business. But these businesses pitch themselves as, you know, an open forum, essentially. They're for you, and they're for your community and so forth. I want to switch over to GoFundMe because GoFundMe is one of the most innovative, applications. And listeners to Washington Watch will be aware of Sweet Cakes by Melissa and Arlene's Flowers. And these are companies that essentially were penalized by the government because they didn't help facilitate so-called same-sex marriages. They didn't want to deliver the flowers. They didn't want to do the wedding cakes for these ceremonies. And they were fined by the government. And folks set up the GoFundMe accounts to help them pay those fines and just recover their losses. But GoFundMe said, no, we're not going to GoFund you. We're going to block. We're going to delete these fundraising efforts. And I think that was a naughty thing for them to do.
It was terrible. It was terrible. I mean, these people had been, their livelihoods were under attack, and people were trying to help them, and GoFundMe decided that they didn't want them to be helped through their platform.
Well, folks, again, if you're interested in looking at this pattern of censorship, go to nrb.org/JMP. That's for John Milton Project, or just tool around. You'll find from 2010 to the present, many other cases of social media censorship. Well, we've heard about a lot today. We've heard about the Clinton scandals. We've heard about the 100-year anniversary of Planned Parenthood, number one provider of abortion in America. We've heard that there's some rigging in this election. It may not be a done deal, but somebody's putting their thumb on the balance, on the scales. And certainly that's also happening in social media. So that's why we're proud to be friends with Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins. This is Jerry Johnson from NRB saying goodbye.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.